RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Let's do another Tech Tuesday, shall we? Being a Tuesday, I don't see us doing it any other day. Today's good because that's the name of the show. All right, Stephen Sykes, nice to have you back.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me again.
I'm trying to stay warm, Stephen. It's the first time in ages that I've worn two times pair of socks.
Welcome to the deep south.
Yeah, I know. I'm finding out about that.
Apparently, possum underwear is a grocery item down there.
Possum underwear. Gosh, you learn something every day. And that's not even tech.
Not really.
Low tech.
Just textiles.
Nice. Beautiful. All right, good to have you back. Have we heard from anyone?
Oh, we had one item of feedback. So David writes that there was no brown pants at CrowdStrike if it was deliberate. Who owns the company if it fits in with the WEF's great reset? First, you have to destroy what's there, the current economy. And we know that BlackRock and Vanguard have majority shares in CrowdStrike. But of course, one must not jump to conclusions without proof, because correlation does not mean causation. No matter how much we might want something to fit the story or narrative that we subscribe to,
I don't want it to fit. Part of me thinks it might fit.
One must be suspicious for absolutely sure, but at the same time, there've been a lot of outages that have happened around the world, and most of them don't get reported about. One that did get reported about was, I can't remember what year it was, but it was, I don't know if they were called Spark or Telecom back then, but they had their massive XT outage around the country.
Trying to drill back into my memory here for that.
So much so that the then CEO, I can't remember the guy's name, I think he was Irish or Scottish.
Oh, he's a Scottish fella. Yeah.
Yeah, and the big apology was something on television in fishing on the side of a river, apologising about everything. And then
that's right. That's how they put him up. Yeah. What was his name?
I can't remember, but somehow fishing relates to everybody.
Doesn't relate to me.
No, first I knew, but.
The closest I'd come to fishing is ordering fish and chips.
You haven't been involved in any fishing scams then?
Not the pH variety. This name thing, Paul somebody, was it?
Yes, that rings a bell. That rings a bell. Yep.
This is going to do me in if I don't find out. So I'm going to quietly search in the background, okay?
Okay.
That's assuming that we have no outages. Scottish CEO, Reynolds or something? Nah, I'm looking. You'd think it had come up, wouldn't you? I've got Theresa Gatting.
No.
Not her.
Was she after? I think, was she before? Before him.
She might have been before. Remember, she was the one who said that we kind of fib on things because we know our audience or our customers are dumb. You remember that?
No, I didn't hear that one.
I don't know how good she was in the job, but as we go, it'll come up. Let's see. All right. Now, what about this latest outage? We reported it in Bytes News on Friday last week. Microsoft Azure, that's the cloud.
Yep.
Outlook, well, it's all the cloud. Outlook and I think Teams. You'd think Microsoft would be least vulnerable to something like this. You'd think.
Well, the outage that occurred before the one that was reported about in New Zealand, they say was the result. It was a cyber attack in the form of a denial of service attack. And we talked about that on Tech Tuesday. I can't remember when. But it's basically when you try to overwhelm computer systems such that they can't respond and do their normal job. And there was a configuration change that Microsoft did that they thought would actually improve their resilience against denial of service attacks, but actually had the opposite effect and made it worse.
Yeah,
so,
And then
it was reported the day after that in New Zealand, various things had fallen apart as well on Microsoft platform. But yes, given all their resources and the billions of dollars that they make, you'd think you could reasonably expect more out of them.
Paul Reynolds. Pretty sure, yeah. Yeah. And then Simon Muta after that. Gosh, that's stuff we needed to know. Do you think this is coincidental? First CrowdStrike owned, mind you, Vanguard and BlackRock own everything in the world, so it's no surprise that they're a major shareholder. But it feels like things are being prodded around the edges.
Things are definitely being shaken up. And a long time ago, there used to be the, what would you call it, a parental campaign went around decades ago. Do you know where your kids are at 10 o'clock at night? Well, these days it should be, do you know where your data is at any second of any given day?
Yeah, at any nanosecond. Yeah.
Can you get to it? If not, then, well, that's something you need to look at. If you can't, if there's an outage and you can't get at your stuff, then you might need to have a rethink about how you do things. You need to plan for scenarios where things just don't work in the way they normally do.
Didn't the Microsoft outage affect parliamentary services and the police?
Yeah, they had issues, and the police weren't getting any emails for a couple of hours or so.
So people who were really twisted up about them coaching or training their recruits and officers that male and female genders didn't exist and were emailing in to complain about that, their emails weren't going in, right? So,
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they probably would have enjoyed that, the police. Like, at last, we can take a break. All right. But that just shows you how everything really hangs by a thread in the end, doesn't it?
Yes, it's the fragility of the beast.
Yeah, the beast. All right, let's go to some of the stories. One NZ, we're not talking about the TV channel. This one isn't losing money. One NZ turning off 3G. Is that a big deal at all?
Well, they've sent out another reminder just to say, hey, you know, March 2025, they're going to turn off 3G, but I suspect that it will actually remain in some way or another. I don't think it'll be a hard deadline, but they've been reminding people who are not quite using 4G to get rid of 3G on their devices or whatever, or to switch to using it. But then this feeds right into something else I had for news, whereby the Japanese, some of the telcos there, have developed the world's first 6G device that is 20 times faster than 5G. So they're saying that it can transmit at 100 gigabits per second over a distance of 100 meters.
That's a very short distance, which means 6G cell sites, transmitters need to be everywhere, do they?
Yeah. And I mean, people are sick now for all kinds of reasons. This is really going to be really bad by the time it catches on in New Zealand, because the frequencies they're saying they run in the sub terahertz bands, which falls between 100 and 300 gigahertz. So that's what they're anticipating to be used by 6G.
Well, that'll split open the nanolipid particles or whatever they're called, carriers in the body.
Yeah, it might cause people a few splitting headaches as well, because that's one of the symptoms that people get with being electromagnetically sensitive.
Do we even really need that speed of data, though?
Well, I don't think we do. And when people were talking about 5G in the beginning, a bit like with Paul Reynolds' XT fishing apology by the river, they used movies as the measurement, the ruler for how fast these would download. So they're saying that the speeds that you can get with 6G are roughly equivalent to downloading 5 HD movies wirelessly per second. It reminds me of a phrase I've come across. You know, when you get older, you're still going to do dumb things, just slower. So now with faster technologies, we can just do dumb things faster.
But it just sounds like it's being done because it can be done.
And there's money to be made. There's big money to be made in this.
Does that mean TV resolution goes to another level now? What are we, 12K or something, or 20K or... It's so high res, you don't even notice the difference after a while.
Well, people just might not care. Remember when 3D TVs were all the rage and 3D movies and people would go out and buy them? And I mean, I have a TV that 3D's any input at all. And yeah, it seemed fine. And then like you just sort of stop using it and then they stop making them and no one cares anymore.
Why didn't they take off like you'd expect them to? Because, you know, we live in a 3D world. We see 3D.
Because you've got to put glasses on and who wants to do that?
Oh, okay.
That could have been sitting there
looking like idiots in the lounge. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they never quite got their 3D TVs, did they?
Yeah. So on the back of the our discussion today about wireless, I went to that talk the other weekend where a gentleman spoke about wireless technologies, and that was really good. It was actually Andy Dooley who ended up doing it in the end, and I think you've spoken with him a while ago on RCR. So he ended up presenting.
Yeah, pretty sure we have. Yep.
And so a woman that I met there called Anne, she's part of STANS, which is Safer Technologies, Aotearoa New Zealand, and I've given her a piece of text, which I'll read out again now. I read this out on Tech Tuesday, 21st of May, but I'll repeat it here because if you find you're still having troubles pushing back with your power company about the health effects of EMF, or I offer an angle that relates to cybersecurity that you could possibly use. So this is something I wrote that I read out a while ago. So you could tell your power company that you're on a mission to reduce your cybersecurity risk. You know from publications that smart meters can be dangerously insecure and are prone to being cracked by criminals, leading them to know when you're out and rob you. You're also aware that data from smart meters is so sensitive and precise that it can reveal what television channel you're watching, and this data can be sold or shared with interested third parties. Ask your power company for evidence that the smart meter they wish to install is actually secure and what security standards it meets, including protocols used with its communication and results from penetration testing. Ask for a relevant copy of these standards pertaining to the exact make and model they want to install. Ask for a copy of their terms and conditions and privacy policy relating to the acquisition and use of the data obtained from the smart meter. And if they push back and say you'll have to contact the manufacturer for those sorts of details, remind them that your contract is with them, the power company, and not with the manufacturer. The power company is responsible for choosing the make and model of the smart meter and introducing a device into your house that could pose a cybersecurity risk. So I hope someone finds that useful.
Yeah, the poor call center person is going to be completely flummoxed with that.
That's kind of the idea.
They'll say, do you mind going, I can't do the accent, do you mind going on hold while I refer this to my supervisor? That's what you'll get.
Which is code for, I'm just going outside to have a cigarette because I can't handle a difficult caller.
Yeah, they probably do that. But that's a lot to come down. But yeah, fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. If they're going to play this game, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Biomethane fuels.
Oh, yeah. So this almost seems to be a Japanese theme for today, but they are using cow dung, and they have used or created a rocket, which they call Zero, and they're using this as in a rocket, which is a little bit larger than SpaceX's Rocket Labs rocket.
Yep.
And it's destined to be launched for the first time in next year. And they're mixing it with liquid oxygen as the oxidizer.
Cow dung and liquid oxygen. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so basically.
No one ever thought those two would come together.
Yeah. So you could ask, like, I don't know, is it Betsy, Clarabelle, or whatever you call your pet cow, to say, come back up here. I need you.
Daisy.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Take a dump here, please. And then past that, the Japanese car manufacturers are looking at harnessing this technology and creating bio-engines, so making small compact engines to basically replace EVs and petrol and diesel vehicles.
I take it there's a process. You don't just shovel it in. to somewhere, right?
I think it might need some post-processing first before it comes into your contact with your vehicle.
Sell it at the farm gate.
Yeah, and get a bottle of milk from the farm gate too while they're at it.
Seriously, do power rockets. Okay.
Yeah, so one of the tests I've done, it runs for a full 10 seconds.
Okay, as long as a cow fart.
Are they that long, are they?
Have you seen those rhino ones? Oh, my God. I tell you, they go for about a minute. All right, well, I suppose that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Environmentally friendly?
Well, you've got to explore other ways of creating energy.
You could do that with human waste, couldn't you?
I don't know. It might depend on what kind of baked beans you've had.
Powered by me.
Me powered.
Yeah, me powered.
So it kind of like puts the I in iPhone or I-45 if you're talking about a Hyundai.
All right. Well, yeah, the Japanese seem to be onto it at the moment with their inventions.
Yes.
Next thing they have to do is bring 6G and cow dung together.
That might be equivalent to microwaving cow dung, wouldn't it?
Well, that could be part of the process.
Oh,
you can transfer
me
100 trillion megabytes of cow dung in 1 second to something.
Well, that might become a new SI unit. So instead of meters per second or anything
right,
like that, it's a cow drops per second, or I don't know.
Yeah, what's that in cow drops per second? You just imagine it. We might be giving someone ideas, and we're not going to get paid for them, Stephen, so we should maybe not talk too much about this because we might give someone like a great opportunity.
Cat might be out of the bag, I think.
Too late. All right, main topic. I have no idea what this means, and I don't know what the spelling of it is either. Bear ID. What's that?
Well, I probably need to explain a bit further what I mean because I suspense you won't be able to bear the suspense much longer and resort to drinking beer. But actually, this is the version of beer spelt B-E-A-R.
Okay, as in don't poke the bear.
Yeah, don't poke the bear, the grizzly bear. So as we all know, facial recognition is quite a problem for people because when it works, it invades privacy. When it doesn't work, people get falsely arrested by police and accused of crimes they didn't commit. So now there's a system called Bear ID, and it's a neural network where they use facial recognition on bears, and this is when they're using this for basically conservation purposes. Watching bears is actually quite difficult because they don't have very many distinctive markings. They're all brown and fluffy, and I don't know if you'd want to cuddle one. You might get your face ripped off. And bears can change a lot from season to season.
They crap in the woods, though, apparently.
Yeah. They molt their coats in the summertime, and then in the autumn, before they go into hibernation, they stick on a third of their body weight. They can watch some individual bears closely, but when you're watching some, you're not watching the other ones. So what they've actually done is they took what's basically a toy. There's an app called Dog Hipster, and you're meant to like hold it up to the face of your dog, and it puts on glasses and a curly moustache and things like that.
Anthropomorphizing the poor dog without its permission.
Pretty much. And so now they do it to bears. And they've got a neural network where they've taken carefully taken photographs of bears, and they train the system to know what bears look like and then can eventually work out individual bears. So the first version of this system, they trained it on 5,000 images of 132 bears, some from Alaska and some from further south in the US and Canada. And then they split it up into two sections. 80% were used for the training, and the 20% was used to test how accurate the system was. And they ended up with about 84% accuracy, which is quite good.
Yeah, that is good. So anything can be facially recognized in the end, can it? Anything with a face, obviously.
Anything with a face and enough information. because at the same time, you've got to give it correct information.
Right.
Geiger, remember? Garbage in, garbage out.
Yep. Applies to everything, obviously. At an 84% level of accuracy, it could probably recognize a bear in the woods.
And this is a better solution than tranquilizing animals and tagging them.
I go along with that. Yep.
Because you can do this passively. Because when they've taken photographs of animals, you know, you've got to get some distance, but you had a really good camera to get a good quality photograph.
Yeah, yeah.
And then feed them into the system. And I mean, when you're training facial recognition on humans, there's billions of us around the world, so there's a lot more photographs to feed into a system to train it to know what a person looks like. You've got far, far less photographs of bear to do this with.
We are good at facial recognition, aren't we? I mean, every now and then, well, it won't be down here because I'm not from here, but every now and then in Wellies, I'd see someone that, you know, might have gone to school with or had encountered somewhere along the line decades ago, you instantly recognize them.
Yes.
Like instantly. You can't remember their name or anything, but you know I know that person.
Yeah. Then, of course, you've got the gait, the walking style too.
Oh, yeah, the gait. Well, I wonder if bears have a particular gait.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So everything will be facially recognized at some point, depending on the training, right? The AI training, that's what needs to go into it. But they'll try and do everything.
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, this is a passive system. You don't need to do this with tranquilizing animals, because they're also looking at doing it now with chimpanzees, lions, and you'll never believe this, salmon.
Salmon?
Yeah.
So, they don't even have a face, really, do they?
Well, turns out they do have on their skin unique qualities, a bit like, well, not quite like fingerprints, but similar to it. So the idea is that as the salmon jump out of the water, they can see them and then uniquely identify and scan each one for its unique markings. So the whole point of this is to check the health of fish. So if the system spots diseases such as sea lice, then they can target that fish and stick it in quarantine, which is better than handling every single fish, checking them out for these sorts of diseases and then causing stress on the fish anyway.
Wouldn't want to stress the fish.
Wouldn't want to stress the fish.
Okay, but this is like it's being sold as convenience. I've heard this before. Oh, it's so convenient. It saves all this hassle. Oh, yeah, really? That's what you always say.
Yeah, it's like when you introduce something like, it does all these cool things, okay, but what's the cost?
Yeah. What occurred to me there, it's interesting because really what we're saying is that probably all life forms have, you know, very individual characteristics, right? And even down to what the scales on a salmon, is that what we're talking about? You know, take a scale print. but it's interesting, the most fundamental, like an electron, they're all exactly the same. There is no individuality there. So that's interesting, isn't it? So obviously it stops at some point in nature, that individual distinguishing features stop and become the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see that late last week, after the problems in the UK, rioting generated by the horrible attack on those kids, there's been some pretty, you'd say lawless behavior, but you can understand it. Sir Keir Starmer, the new prime minister, who makes my skin crawl, I have to say, has come out and said, all right, we're going to double down on these hooligans. They're like football hooligans. No mention of why they're in the streets. But what did he mention as one of the tools? Facial recognition.
Yep. I feel, I don't know quite what the word is, not sick to my stomach, but uneasy to my core every time I see cameras.
Yeah, because that's what that means.
And as we've talked about before, no matter what technology you're using, and even if you forget technology entirely, it always comes back to trust. Which reminds me, the next time you go shopping in a supermarket, have a look around for any signs. There's one I've come across uptown at a New World, and they have written on a sign which is partially obscured, it says, "For your safety, security cameras are with license plate recognition," and I don't know what the rest of the sign says because it's covered. But basically, so we're using cameras with license plate recognition for your safety, but we don't give a damn about your privacy.
All right, so Bear ID.
Bear ID. And they also do it with chimpanzees as well. And they've got a system that works with chimpanzees so that you can actually recognize the body of the animal. So if you're trying to take a photograph of a chimpanzee and he's a bit camera shy and he turns around and puts you back to the camera, it still recognizes the chimpanzee.
Can it facially recognize them from the rear? They're working on that one. All right. Well, there's new stuff every week. Particularly, though, like the story about the cow dung and the liquid oxygen coming together to power rockets. I think that's a cool thing. What are we going to be looking at next week, do you think?
Well, next week I thought that I would talk about some influential women who have made big contributions to the tech world.
Okay.
I'm thinking of, what's her last name? She's a Jewish American actress from the 30s, Hedy, what's her name? I'll think of it later on. She basically invented Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, that'll be interesting. I look forward to that.
Yeah. I think it'll be good.
I won't be making any smart comments during that.
No, you might get a clip around the ear.
More than my job's worth. Anyway, good to catch up again. Stephen Sykes, Tech Tuesday. Look forward to next week.
See you then.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.